up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Hue is the game for this week's episode. Hue is a puzzle platform game, and it definitely compares to Gris or Gris that we've played before and talked about on the show, but also games like Celeste, Super Meat Boy, Inside, so very much in that kind of 2D puzzle platforming game. The game was originally released in August of 2016 on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. And then in November of 2019, it came to Vita. That is the PlayStation Vita, and this is cross-buy and cross-save between PlayStation Vita and the PS4. And in June of 2019, it finally came to Switch. And then in 2020, a couple different points, it came to different mobile platforms. The game was developed by Fiddlesticks Games, which was a small team out of London, I think pretty much two guys, and trying to track where they've gone or what they're doing now has been tough, but they've definitely started other companies. I think the one guy was involved in making games such as With the Dust, Aboard the Looking Glass, or Paper Trail. I don't know those games, but I think they're kind of still kicking. At least the one developer is. I couldn't find much about the other guy. The game was published by Curve Games, and they're a publisher out of London, and they actually bought Fiddlesticks Games in 2020. Curve Games, I believe we've touched on them before, at least in our Tales and Sales episodes, because they publish games like The Swapper or Serial Cleaner. The game had physical releases. In July of 2018, Limited Run did a standard edition for PS4 and Vita, so those are definitely out in the wild. And before that, in January of 2017, IndieBox actually did a PC collector's edition, and we've talked about IndieBox before. It's a very interesting sort of setup that used to be around. It was almost like a subscription service, but I think you could purchase a la carte. I'm not sure. The game launched with an MSRP of $14.99. And those limited run editions, PS4 and Vita, were both $24.99. And then that Indie Box Collector's Edition, I believe, was $30 a la carte, but I think the subscription back then was $25 a month. Runtime of the game, you could spend anywhere between 4 and 6 hours to complete this game. There are definitely some extras in the game, some collectibles, but I don't think I am going to get them. Me, I actually bought this a long time ago, and I could not find in my email the price that I paid on PlayStation, but I definitely know I paid somewhere around $5, maybe a little more. And no one had recommended this to me at the time. It was just something that I saw on sale. The colors and how that would go into the game and the platforming was something that was interesting to me, especially for me because I am a bit colorblind. So I wasn't sure how this was going to land for me. But actually, my wife started playing this, and then we kind of played it together, and then I decided to pick it up and play it on the Vita, and I beat it on the Vita, and it took me about four and a half hours, I would say. I definitely did not get all the collectibles, but I went straight through on the Vita and had a good experience. let's talk gameplay for Hugh. So this is a fairly simple game, and its basic idea is it's a 2D platforming puzzler. So let's start with some of the basics. So you'll be able to move back and forth, move around in a 2D space. You'll be jumping. That's pretty much all you'll be doing. But as you're going about these different worlds or levels, if you come across a block that can be moved, if you're just walking straight into it, your character will just push it. But you can hold a button and actually pull it backwards towards you. And there'll be ladders in the platforming. And I like the fluidity here because you don't have to be at the bottom of the ladder to start climbing it. In fact, if you're falling or even if you're jumping, as long as you press up when you're in the ladder, you'll just start climbing it. So you can actually climb ladders pretty fast by jumping up them. And there'll be a bunch of things that you're interacting with, as well as pulling the blocks. You'll be switching levers. You'll be standing on switches. And then there'll be doors, or rather doorways. And whenever you're in the doorway, all you have to do is press up, and then you go into the room or into the next level or whatever. So let's talk layout and progression for this game. So you're going to start in kind of this hub, which is like this village. It's pretty small, but it's open. Like, you can jump and go in buildings and like go out at a higher level and even jump across roofs, but there's not that many buildings. But the main sort of area that you're going to be going into is this underground path that when you go down into it, it'll have multiple directions. And each of these directions is going to be locked by a different thing that you have to get in order to progress to there. So it's very linear. It's very limiting in terms of your exploration, at least at first. And so once you get access to one of the paths, you can go down that path, and then that'll be like a sequence of levels, basically. So you'll go into a door, and you'll go into another room, and then you have to progress to another room, so on and so forth. And so what you're going to get into is sort of the sequence of room puzzles, where basically your goal is to go into a room and then get out of it by going in the next door. Sometimes you will have to unlock that door, but most of the time you just have to arrive at where the door is in order to progress to the next room. When you're going down one of these paths and through these sequential rooms, eventually you'll reach the end of that path and you'll get a reward. You'll go into a room that has a reward waiting for you. And then when you go to the other side of the room, the exit door, it'll kind of link you back almost in a loop to that underground path back to where you were originally. So this is going to be kind of the rinse and repeat for a lot of the game. You're going to be going into a path, doing a sequence of room puzzles, and then getting a reward and then getting back to where you were going, and then you'll have access to something else. That reward is what's going to give you access to different paths. And whenever you start a path or whenever you end a path, you'll kind of go through this little story exposition, and it's while you're moving. You'll basically run across and open a letter, and then the letter will get spoken out loud. And you'll have to kind of progress through what I feel is kind of like a filler room, or like a sequence of climbing ladders or going down steps or something like that, that really kind of feels unnecessary. I don't know if it's to get you used to just the movement, but it kind of occurs for most of the game, and it kind of just feels like, oh, let's keep you moving while you're listening to all this dialogue because we have to give you this exposition. But as you go down a path and get your reward, what is interesting is that your reward is going to be a different color. You will start the game pretty early on and get the first color, which I think is like a sky blue or something like that. And what colors are going to allow you to do are access your color wheel. So if you're moving with the left joystick, your right joystick, at any point, you can move it and it'll bring up this kind of color wheel. And what happens is when you switch to a color, it'll change the background to that color. So if you have something that's like an object or an obstacle that is standing in front of you that is that color, when you switch the background to that color, it will disappear, almost like it's not even there. So this immediately, I'm sure as you're listening, this can really open up to a lot of different platforming puzzles. What's also interesting is that once you go to the color wheel, everything kind of moves in slow motion. You're almost like in bullet time. And so you can quickly swap between colors. And it's really interesting because there are going to be consequences for trying to swap colors like mid-air or in sequence. There's going to be timing stuff where you will have to kind of do that in slow motion. I really like the way that plays out, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. So the main thing you're going to be doing is going down these paths in the sequence of rooms. So when you're in a room, again, the goal is to get to the door that goes to the next room. And when you're in the room, in order to get to that door, you're going to need to go through some platforming or puzzle challenge. And it starts out pretty simple, but there are things that you'll definitely see throughout the whole game, but then they'll start to get more complex. Some basic things, you'll be moving blocks to kind of jump on them and get to a higher platform that might be where the door is or might be where a switch is or something like that. Eventually, you'll come across like crumbling platforms or platforms that move automatically that you have to time jumping on them. Like I said, some of these doors to exit to the next room, you might need to find a key somewhere in the level first, and it'll be pretty obvious when you look at the door because it'll have like a lock on it, and then you'll see the key floating somewhere else. Some other things, you might have to stand on a switch that'll open a gate, and when you go off the switch, it might close the gate, so you might have to find a block to then put on there. Nothing really that revolutionary, a little bit of Zelda, a little bit of 2D platforming. If you're any kind of veteran for any platforming or puzzling games, a lot of these should feel right at home to you. But of course, you're not just going to be going about aimlessly trying different things. You are going to have to avoid dying. And there are a lot of different ways that you can die. The most common, at least in the beginning, is you can get crushed by something that's falling. So there might be situations where boulders are going to fall from the sky or from a certain area. Or you might have blocks that fall that you can push, or you might get pinched between a block and something else. So all those things can make you die. Also very common, there'll be spike pits. So as soon as you fall into it, you would die, or there might be spikes on the roof. If you get hit by the spike, you die. And then, of course, there'll be a lot more complex things. There'll be different lasers that are different colors, and if you get shot by it, you're immediately dead. So a lot of different things like that, and dying is not that big of a deal because you just reset the room. You go back to the beginning of the room. These rooms are not that extensive, but you might have to do some progression in these rooms. Like you might have to find a block and get it down to another place. And if you happen to die, it's going to reset everything. So it will reset your progress in that room. And what's interesting about sort of the layout or the landscape of these rooms are that they're pretty cramped. So contrary to the opening kind of hub, the little village that you're in where it's just open, you can jump and do whatever, a lot of these are going to be pretty cramped, and that could have consequences. For example, like I said, if there are spikes on the roof or something like that, something that happened to me a lot, you know, if I died a couple times, I got real agitated, so I was trying to cut corners. So jumping up ladders to try and go faster up ladders, if there are spikes on the roof above the floor where the ladder ends, a bunch of times I was jumping through the ladder and I hit the spikes and I had to reset. So there's really not a lot of like free, you know, frolicking room. So definitely be aware of that if you start to see spikes on the ceiling, because these cramped spaces can really get you. And of course, there'll be more advanced things. What is really cool, especially in the mid and later parts of the game, is that you're going to have combos with you jumping or something like that, that are also going to involve swapping colors while you're like in the air. So like I said, when you go on the color wheel, it'll kind of go in slow motion, bullet time. But something that you'll see pretty constant is that there might be a block that is in front of you that you need to jump on, but you can't get over it because it's blocked on either side. So what you would do is switch to that color and then stand where the block is and then jump. And then while you're in midair, as long as you're higher than the height of the block, you can switch to any other color and then you'll land on the block. So that's something that should be fairly intuitive, but definitely adhere to that. There'll also be some shielding tactics. So like I said, there might be lasers that are shooting beams constantly that you can't get hit by, or there might be things falling. There might be, you know, boulders falling. They have those things from like the Super Mario games, those angry squares that are going to fall as soon as you get under them. They have these skulls that are kind of taking those places. But if you can find a way to kind of shield yourself from those things, and typically that involves putting a block in front of a laser, you know, even pushing a block under where the skulls are going to fall, they won't fall and crush the block. So if you have it there under it, you can kind of shield yourself from that. And eventually you'll see instances where the blocks that you're pushing or using that are a specific color can actually change color. One way mid to late game is that you'll experience these boxes as springs. So when you jump on them, they switch to another color. So they're kind of cycling through the wheel. This was really cool once I finally saw this. And then later in the game, you'll have sort of these fountains of paint that if you're pushing a block and it touches that, it'll change into the color that that paint fountain is spraying. And it's very strategic because you're going to find instances where you need the block that is on a certain switch or that is blocking something to be a certain color or to not be a certain color in order to coordinate with with like where you're going to be, or another block that's blocking your way when you go up to that place, or a laser that needs to be blocked. So a lot of sort of color coordination. Definitely at times you'll be thinking a little bit. What's interesting about the game is that pretty much everything that's not like the floor or the ceiling or sort of the all dark background can be a color or can be not. So you'll start out the game where the blocks that you can push are pretty much going to be black, so you don't have to worry about their color, but then you'll see that some of these blocks are going to start to be painted a particular color, so that's going to involve in the puzzling. Same thing with things like boulders. Boulders are going to start out, they'll be falling and they're black, but eventually they'll be changing color. So I sort of like where the floor is for this game, and like all the things that are set in with the puzzle platforming and the colors, I feel like there is so much potential to be really crazy. And so let's start to get into that conversation, which is pacing and accessibility in this game. I think the pacing is really good. The puzzle complexity, like I said, it starts out with introducing like one or two particular things, leaving blocks without color, and then eventually starting to introduce, hey, we can give this block a color. And now you're seeing that. Now that's like in your mind now. It's in the backpack of things that you might see. And so it starts pretty simple, pretty one note, but it does get to be complex. And there's a good variation of the color synergy. Again, I feel like this is more later in the game. I will say, if you're looking for like a serious platform puzzle challenge game, I don't know if you're going to find that here. There were definitely some moments where I had some head scratchers, but it wound up that I was overthinking it, or it was simpler than I thought. Most of these rooms or puzzles really only have like one twist or one part of the room that is the complex part. And once you solve that, it's pretty much off to the races to get out of that room. But I definitely felt at times like once something new was introduced, I was like, oh my gosh, they could do crazy things with this and really boggle my mind. And they never really did. And I think that's great for accessibility for somebody that's kind of looking to just do like these passive puzzles or one room at a time and solve it and kind of get that feeling of accomplishment. But you're definitely not going to be banging your head against the wall with some of these puzzles. Maybe if you overthink, but not by thinking like it's way complex or way over your head, because it's not often going to be. Other things in this game, there are optional collectibles. You might see in the first few levels, like an easy one. It's basically an Erlenmeyer flask, like the triangular flask that's like off to the side or in like a hidden or tough to reach place, or a place that you might not see if you don't try to go down one particular path. Some of these are going to be unavailable because it's blocked by like a color that you don't have yet. So there will be some backtracking if you want to collect these, if you want to remember. Again, when you complete a path, you kind of go back to the beginning, this underground area that all the paths lead back to. So you could go back through one of the areas if you remember that there was a collectible there that you want to get. And now that you have the color, you can get that. It's not something that I did, but I do think the game makes it very accessible because there is actually a map in the menu where you can click the different areas, which I think are just the sequences of rooms. So like if you choose one area, it'll show you how many of the flasks are there and how many you have. So you actually can kind of quick travel, but it gives you a warning. You'll lose your progress in whatever room sequence that you're on right now. But if you're later in the game and you come back to the middle, like you could go to any of those paths if you want to go get these collectibles. Other things, so very quick respawn. Like I said, the room is going to reset if you die. I feel like the respawn is not necessarily like Hotline Miami level. Maybe it is on PlayStation 4, but I will say on Vita, the load times between dying or between rooms, if you go in a door, is a little slower. It's not like glacially slow, but you know, somewhere between 5 to 10 seconds, which is longer than I would expect for such a smaller, kind of quick, simple game. Something that's really important to me is that there is a colorblind mode in the menus in options where instead of just giving you the color, like the color wheel, it also puts a shape on it. And that made all the difference to me, especially I think the toughest ones for me were like the orange to yellow and the yellow to green, because it's like a lime green and the orange is, I mean, I'm a little colorblind, so it was really helpful to also have that symbol, like the sky blue is like a moon, one of the fuchsias or purples or is like an hourglass or something like that. So it's really helpful to have that, and shout out to the devs, especially for a game that is riding on your ability to perceive color or differentiate. To have that, I think, is really, really helpful. The game will autosave, I believe, once you go to another room. I rarely actually close the game unless I got back to the main path, and it put me right back where I was. So I didn't find any issues with this. I think I actually beat this game in like two, maybe three sittings. So I don't know if there's any jank with the saving, but it seems like it's pretty fine to me. And then finally, what's really good is after you beat this game or get the final color and then finish the story, you do go back to the village and you're open to explore and get the collectibles. So I really like that. Again, if you're somebody that wants to collect these, you have the time for it. It's not going to lock you out of it. And it's always nice when a game does that for you. Let's talk about the vibe of Hue, and let's start with the visuals. So the visuals are actually pretty simple. It's kind of like a negative, like your character is all black, almost like Mr. Game & Watch. And the walls are all black, the platforms are all black, objects are black. Again, all those things, as long as they're not painted a particular color. But it does have this kind of colorless negative aspect to it, similar to a game that we talked about before, which is Apotheon. Although Apotheon is a lot more detailed, this is super rounded, like the characters and the models are super rounded. And then, of course, you have the color wheel. So when you switch to a different color, it does fully color the background, not including, again, like the stairs or like the ground that you're walking on or the ceiling above you or the spikes or anything like that. But like the space between the ceiling and the floor, it gets fully colored. So it is super realistic in terms of how it negates that color if there's an object of that color and makes it not appear. So I do like that. And again, very, very helpful to have the colorblind mode and have the shapes with the color. Very helpful for me. But in terms of like the ground and the floor and sort of the negative space, there's really minimal flair. That's where it's very unlike Apotheon. Apotheon had Greek imagery or carved into things or a lot of ornate sort of patterns or things like that. This game definitely does not have a lot of that. There's not a lot of flair in the design of the negative spaces. The different blocks that you see, there is sort of a pattern for how they look to help you, whether it's movable or not, because there will be blocks that are stationary that you can't move. So you can differentiate the patterns. It is pretty obvious. And again, like we talked about, it is kind of cramped. You are kind of in these small cramped spaces where you can't really jump that much. There is a lot of detail in terms of like the things that can move or the things that are going to affect you or maybe kill you or something like that. But it is really seen as like you're in this cramped space. There's not a lot of room to jump and stuff like that. So you do feel that as you're progressing through. And in terms of themes and setting, so obviously the game focuses on color versus black, white, or gray, but there's also a lot of thematics about that, like the world of color versus the world of black, white, and gray. When you're getting the story exposition, when you come across the letter and it gets read aloud, there is some interesting story here with like there's this woman who is your mother and you're her son, and so there is some family aspect, but I'm not sure like the nature of your existence or of the characters, all of the characters. Existence. There's a lot of commentary about like color, and it's almost like color was just discovered or something like that. So there's this weird connotation of like there's experiments happening or nuclear physics or metaphysics or questioning existence, or there's a lot of kind of open-endedness or allusion to things of that nature. I don't know the bottom of it because I don't feel like I got an answer by the end of the game, but it is interesting, sort of the commentary on like a world without color or with color or the discovery of color or something like that. And then there is this story about your family or, you know, the people in this small town. Again, very minimal. You're like a boating town, I think, or at least boats come and go in order for you to travel certain places. There is like a university that's involved in the story, but again, very minimal. So not a ton there, but it's definitely present. And in terms of audio, the audio shifts a lot, but for the most part in the beginning, it's very ominous, it's somber. But then as you're getting through levels, it can be uplifting. And when you're in some of the more difficult puzzle rooms, like the music can kind of pick up and be fast-paced, especially near the end. The majority of the music, I think, is piano. There are some strings in and out, but it really reminds me a lot of I Am Setsuna, where it's kind of like this loneliness or this somber, but then there's this warmth in how the piano is playing, as well as the keystrokes. There's a lot of sort of matter-of-factly kind of stroking of the keys, which I feel like comes through a lot. And then there is voice acting. So your mother, the one who was reading the letters, is kind of this charming British woman who has this voice that's very tender and very charming. And so you do have these sequences where the letters being read to you does add certainly a little bit of personality. But again, I'm not sure about like how they could have done that better in terms of what you're doing while the letters are being read, because you kind of progressing through these areas does seem a bit filler just to wait for the letter to be read. Let's wrap up the conversation about Hue. So this is a simple puzzle platformer. Nothing really crazy here, nothing too complex. But what's interesting is that I did feel this pull to keep going, kind of this one more room mentality. If I solved a puzzle real quickly, I found myself diving in headfirst to the next room. Like immediately, I kind of had that pull to that. So I do like that because certainly a lot of like roguelikes do that, where it's like one more run when this is kind of like, oh, here's another puzzle. I'm immediately just going to jump in and try to solve it because I feel like I can. And in terms of the puzzles, I feel like majority of them, they're accomplishable puzzle challenges. They don't make you think too much, maybe for a minute. Often, again, like I said, I found that I was maybe overthinking something. But it is a nice challenge, a nice kind of pickup thing where you can do these puzzles, maybe rapid fire. Again, sort of that one more room mentality, and kind of dive into it if you're looking for, you know, a nice small challenge. There are collectibles if you want, so if you're someone that is interested in getting a lot of trophies, this game actually does not have a platinum trophy. I didn't talk about it in the beginning. I don't know if any of you would want to get the collectibles if there's no platinum trophy, but you certainly can do that if you're a collectathon person. I feel like the story and the vibe a little bit forgettable. Again, I like the puzzle synergy with the colors and the complexity that can be there. I don't think they max out on complexity and challenge, but I think that's okay. In terms of value, I think $15 for the MSRP is okay. I feel like you might be better if you got definitely on sale, ideally around or under 10, I think for the consumer is best for this game in terms of value. But what I like about it is it's a game really for all levels of people. If this is a challenge to you, if these puzzles are a challenge to you, that's great. If not, I still feel like this is a nice simple puzzle platformer, maybe a palate cleanser, something with kind of minimal stakes. Again, I loved playing this on the Vita. Nice to get a couple of rooms in bed. Again, sometimes my head was scratching a little bit, but for the most part, not going to blow you away. But I think this is a nice 4 or 5 hours spent. Great on the Vita. And so I do highly recommend that you try out this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.